You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. With me today, one of the original members of the Miami Heat Beat podcast team, Mr. Jack Alfonso, part-time employee of Locked On Heat. Not really, but at least that's what he says on Twitter. We haven't really been able to finish the deal. We can't afford you, to be honest with you, Jack. You're just too expensive.
I'm happy to just be a friend of the show.
There you go. That's how we get everybody to come on. We could get everybody to contribute by just saying you're a friend of the show and not paying you or anything. So it works out really well for both of us. So just wanted to get a feeling for this Heat season. You know, we're currently 3-4, tough loss to the Boston Celtics last night. We're recording this on a Thursday afternoon. And I don't know, just in watching this season play out so far, I've got to say this kind of, I don't want to go so far as to say that it's been a boring season by any stretch. It's just getting started and there hasn't really been anything to take off, but that I'm kind of getting a sense that I am waiting for the other shoe to drop. And maybe it's, to me anyway, it's somewhat akin to what happened a couple of years ago in Dwayne's last season, when at the start of training camp, we start to hear rumblings about Jimmy Butler being traded out of Minnesota and Miami's obviously a suitor and everything else. And then it gets, just kind of falls apart at the last second. And obviously you still got Josh Richardson on this team. You're looking to make this big upgrade and it doesn't happen. And then you're just kind of riding out the season, enjoying the last dance, and you don't really go anywhere. I mean, obviously the parallels aren't perfect, but maybe the Harden thing is kind of hanging over this team to a degree where it just doesn't, nothing has really stood out just yet. Do you share any of that feeling whatsoever?
Absolutely. I think you did put something to it with that comparison. And I think the Harden thing has kind of loomed. But even if you take Harden out of the picture, they talked a lot about continuity, but they also didn't bring back Jay Crowder, who is one of the most like important pieces in the run. Yeah. So you have kind of this situation where like there's continuity, but it is a very different roster construction than it was last year in little areas, but significant areas. So it's really hard to get a read on what this team is and what this team should be, like what we should expect of it. And like with the Harden rumors, it does kind of feel like you're waiting for something to happen. I don't think like a superstar trade is coming necessarily.
Yeah.
But it does feel like something has to happen before the deadline.
Yeah. And I think that's spot on. Well, you brought up a good point, and I mentioned it a few episodes ago, is that, you know, they embraced this style of play with the switchable defense in the Orlando bubble, and it was unlocked because of Andre Iguodala and even to a greater degree, Jay Crowder's insertion in the starting lineup. And now without Jay here, you're kind of fumbling around with the rotations and you're not sure what identity you want to embrace. And Spo keeps mentioning this in all of his press conferences and everything else. He keeps talking about, we're still trying to find an identity. It's like, yeah, well, you're kind of in charge of creating that identity to some degree, and I know he's tinkering with the lineup. This isn't to criticize Spo, but right now this does seem like somewhat of a rudderless team, because Kelly is very much a stopgap measure at power forward, and that it's worked to some degree over the last couple of games is fine, but you know, he was struggling the first quarter against the Celtics. You were able to beat up on the Oklahoma City Thunder, but they're barely an NBA team at this point, so I'm not sure that two-game barometer is exactly where you want to measure yourself at this point in the season.
Yeah, and I mean, I always have a little bit of patience with Spo, because like you said, he's a tinkerer, and like chemistry always takes a while to develop, and like you also had like this weird Jimmy situation. Yes. Where he's kind of in and out. But like there's still clearly something, even if they get the ball flowing, like, you know, at peak efficiency, wonderful chemistry, like Spurs, like ball movement, like you said, it like Kelly Olynyk is a stopgap. It doesn't seem like they have a permanent answer for their power forward rotation. And even with Tyler Hero, like I'm not like super down on Tyler Hero, but like, and I support the project to kind of try him out at point guard, but it's also clear that he's not going to be a permanent point guard, in my opinion.
But I mean, does he have to be? Like, I mean, with Jimmy and Bam bringing up the ball as much as they do, like, what is the role of the quote unquote point guard? Even Goran, you know, throughout his career hasn't really necessarily been a top end playmaker. He's mostly a scorer, really. And I don't know, like, that he's a stabilizing presence on the offense is one thing. And maybe that's something that Tyler is not. Again, to Spo's credit, he keeps mentioning that the lack of flow in the offense has been about a lack of intent whenever you're bringing the ball up or initiating the offense. And he keeps using that terminology over and over. And I feel like these are just very thinly veiled digs at Tyler Hero saying, quit shooting the fucking ball and try swinging it around every once in a while instead of trying to shoot over a double team. But, you know, Tyler, I mean, Tyler's a scorer. That's all he's ever been throughout his whole career. And so I don't know if the evolution is going to necessarily take place. That he can be a good playmaker is one thing, but I don't know if he's ever going to be the stabilizing presence on offense that a lot of people expect him to be.
Yeah, and I think Nikias Duncan wrote something for the basketballnews.com a little bit back about the Tyler Hero project at point guard and comparing it more to what the Suns did in Devin Booker's second season about just like giving him as many touches as possible so he can get that experience, even if he is more of a scorer long-term. He gets a ton of touches, so he gets the experience and he develops faster and more fully. And I support that, but, you know, this team was two games away from an NBA championship, so there are, like, pretty high expectations of what they are now. And I'm not saying I'm impatient with Tyler's development. I don't think it's fair to expect him to make some superstar leap in his sophomore season. But like from a team perspective, it doesn't look like a team that made the finals last year.
Right.
And when you preach continuity, like Pat kind of talked about like, oh, I want to bring it all back. And it just doesn't look like a team that is benefiting from continuity. And that's the weird thing. Like they don't look like a team with great chemistry right now.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. And I keep going back to that same thing. It's like, you know, they were a very different team at the start of last year when they had Myers in a starting lineup and Kendrick Nunn, and they were just kind of figuring it out. Well, the book on that group is out, and clearly two of those five players cannot play at an NBA level right now. And so you embrace this new identity in the bubble, and now you're kind of trying to start something else altogether differently, and it's just not working. So, I mean, yes, that lack of continuity is pretty apparent there. I'm glad you've mentioned that. Where do you feel on the Harden possibility? Because, I mean, I feel like everybody on Heat Twitter is so torn about it. I don't know if I've seen your take in particular.
I mean, I've always been I've been of the position that if you can get him, you do, and, like, even more so now, I think. Like, I think we've seen enough from this team, even in the early going, to know that like they could definitely benefit from having a James Harden like player on their team. They're not like so amazing at ball movement that they don't want somebody like James Harden to like come in and ruin their amazing chemistry, because they don't have amazing chemistry right now. But my position on it right now is it seems kind of out of Miami's hands, sure. Right? Like,
yeah, no, this is all theoretical. Like, I mean, yeah. Like most people, we're convinced that you could trade Kendrick Nunn and like a future second round pick to get a top MVP type player. And of course that's not realistic, but like, do you have any feelings of like, maybe like Harden wouldn't be a great fit, or, you know, you're worried about him partying too much in strip clubs or things of that sort?
I mean, sure. To an extent, I don't know the guy. Like personally, I've never been in a locker room with him. Yeah. I like, there are concerns about like, you know, that kind of like, guy, he definitely has a lot of question marks. He's not Jimmy Butler in the sense like,
right,
you know, there were questions about Jimmy Butler joining the Heat, but they weren't about like work ethic or something like that. And I'm like more agnostic about the whole James Harden work ethic thing, because he is an MVP level player, and he has been, and that like says something about him positively. And if he wanted to play for the Heat, that would say something about, I think, you know, his willingness to work hard. And I think he has adjusted a little bit this year from kind of the D'Antoni system, where he's like not ball dominant as much. He's still James Harden, but like, I think he's shown some willingness to adjust a little bit. And then mostly I think Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA, and it's not Harden's job as much to conform to Spoelstra as it is Spoelstra's job to like lead the team, conform to Harden like he did with LeBron, and figure out like some kind of compromise there.
Yeah.
Where you're not like plugging in an MVP level player to a pre-existing system. You're building around an MVP level player and getting some sort of buy-in from him in turn, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you always have to find a way to maximize every player on your roster, whether they're a role player or a superstar. And I think that's the onus of that falls on the coach to determine. Did you see the clip from Calvin Murphy? The so you saw it.
He quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see that. That was, that wasn't encouraging. And I think, you know, if you're looking at other guys to trade for, Bradley Beal looks really good. I, again, don't think he's going to be very attainable for Miami, but like, right. Yeah, there are legitimate concerns about James Harden as, you know, whether he is the kind of guy you want to bring into this environment.
Is it a full-on conspiracy theorist to say that he's like his tanking his way out of Houston by quitting like this? Because I feel like he's dropping his value down pretty considerably every time he does something like this, and maybe he's just trying to force his way out.
I'd be willing to hear that, and I'd, you know, that'd be interesting. But I guess some people would say to that that that's an indictment on him even further, that like he is willing to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I feel that way, but it is, he is a weird guy. There's such weirdness around him that I don't know exactly what to put stock in.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if they can get him, they should get him, because the talent, the upside is so high that I think it outweighs every other question you have about him. And I also think like, it's not like he's going to be untradeable if for some reason it doesn't work out in Miami. Like, he's still going to be James Harden. If it doesn't work out, you'll bounce back. But like, I also don't think they do a trade unless they're pretty sure they can get some buy-in from James Harden.
Draw the line at including Duncan Robinson in a trade, or you just say whatever it takes to get a guy like Harden?
That's tough, because it's one of those things where it's not about Duncan Robinson specifically, but it is about like, if you do completely gut your roster, what are you left with?
Yeah.
I would probably say, you know, in most cases, get the superstar, you know, screw everything else, but it's also so hard to evaluate Duncan Robinson, because I haven't really seen a player like him. Like, he was like 20 game. He came across the 300.
Yeah.
Three-pointer mark.
22 like 20 games less than Luka Doncic and Dame Lillard. Yeah.
Yeah. That's insane. Like, he is this like all time great shooter. And I don't know how to account for that. My concern with that is that like, it doesn't seem like Tyler Hero and him are ever going to be able to share the floor for extended periods of time.
Okay. Oh, why do you say that? Because I've mentioned it before, but I'm curious. I don't know if this is something that other Heat podcasters or Heat media have talked about, because to me, it just does not seem like a great fit. But why do you say that?
I mean, they're not good defensive players. And like, I think it can work in a situation where like, you have incredible defensive players around them, but even then you're like,
but my concerns are offensive
and Hero.
My concerns are offensive. Like, Tyler is so driven to score that he doesn't get the offense going the same way Bam does with that dribble handoff game. That's so perfect for Duncan and his skill set. And so Duncan's just kind of waiting around a corner for a pass that's never going to come as Tyler puts up this floater over two defenders. And so their styles don't mesh, which is why I've suggested that Tyler should come off the bench. And I think it behooves him to be able to score against second team defenses. And at the same time, you can get a more consistent defender in Avery Bradley, who seems like he's a pretty good fit.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And like, I think the offensive point has gone under discussed because the defense has been such an obvious problem. But I do think you're right about that.
Yeah.
I do think Tyler's best fit is as a six man for all the reasons you said. The complication with that is just, it seems like they want to definitely save Goron minutes And I think Spo had mentioned wanting to save Bradley minute, like that he's not really super willing to lean very heavily on him. And that's a problem because, I don't know, you got to play somebody in the regular season and you can't play Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could talk about it, but I mean, we I think we did discuss Nunn during that.
Yeah.
Okay. We did. Okay. I wasn't sure. Was that an episode that you filmed? No, I know we
recorded. That was one of the episodes I was on, and we both basically agreed that he, you know, might not be in the NBA in like a year or two.
Yeah.
I think you were harder on the fact that he's not a rotation level player. And I said, hey, maybe he can fill in somewhere. I'm kind of on your team now where I don't think he's an NBA level player. I don't see what he does well.
Yeah.
It's really rough. You know, it's not like I'm rooting against him. I'm rooting for everybody on the Heat pretty hard, obviously. And it does stink because he did have a really promising beginning to his rookie year. He, you know, his second rookie of the year voting. And it just completely went away. And I don't know how to account for that completely.
Yeah, the conference is shot. But I also think that maybe that's a factor in Tyler too. Like, I mean, he's not scoring well. And I wonder if the Harden rumors have gotten to him to some degree, because it just feels like, I mean, in this world and given his high profile girlfriend and, you know, the social media nature of the world around us, he has to have heard about the James Harden rumors. That it's not him. That's the sticking point, that that they're willing to trade him and everybody else in the roster in order to get Harden. It probably is not serving as a good confidence boost. So I wonder how much that plays into his lack of flow, because he does seem like out of sorts in total. But let's move on from Tyler, because I don't know. He's either going to bounce back or he's going to wind up somewhere else. But for now, I'd say I would lean more towards him bouncing back. He'll figure it out. Maybe he'll be benched. I can't see that being benched as a 20-year-old in your second year in the NBA is going to be like a blow to your self-esteem, considering that he thrived in that role last year. So I think maybe Spo has that conversation the same way he has with Goran Dragic and say, you know, maybe it's better for you to come off the bench for us. But I'm curious. I want to talk to you about Jimmy, because I keep banging this drum and I feel like I'm the only person saying it, but I have legitimate concerns about Jimmy health-wise. Like, he had a really good game against the Celtics where he was aggressive, but his shot continues to falter. And I just wonder, you know, his game is not going to age very gracefully if he does not have a consistent jump shot. And so I am very legitimately worried about what the future holds for Jimmy Butler and the Heat.
Yeah. I mean, I love the guy. I love watching the guy, but I think Alf Sidney of Heat Beat said it maybe after the first game of the season that he's scary to watch. Like, he puts his body at risk during a stupid play, like a stupid regular season game. And that's just the guy he is. And like you said, he doesn't really have a reliable jump shot. That doesn't seem to be developing. Like, he was one of the worst jump shooters in the NBA last year. And, you know, there's something to him kind of having this magical ability to turn it on at will. But there is, you know, the injury concern. He really put his body all on the line last season. He's coming off of the shortest offseason in NBA history, which is like particularly hard for somebody like him who was single-handedly playing a final series, like, you know, with no support from like Bam or Goran.
Right.
It's difficult. I have serious concerns about what the future holds for him. You know, whether it's this year or onward, that's a scary situation. And I don't want to say that you should have like trepidation about like tying the franchise to him, because clearly everybody on the Heat has the utmost confidence that Jimmy Butler is the guy you tie your franchise to. And for good reason. Like, he's the epitome of Heat culture. He's proven it every step of the way. And, you know, he's shown like this weird warrior mentality that like makes it hard to doubt him. But you're totally right that, it doesn't seem like it's kind of one of those Dwayne Wade things, even to another extent, where with Dwayne Wade, you were like, well, his game's not going to age well. And he's clearly going to have this like quickened decline because of the hard way he played. But even Dwayne Wade had like, you know, the jump shot, like that post game that like allowed him to age really gracefully.
And the Jimmy old man game. Yeah. Yeah, Dwayne had that old man game in the paint. He had some moves where he had more touch around the basket. I mean, so much of Jimmy's offense is relying on drawing fouls, which is drawing contact and getting thrown to the floor and further aggravating these injuries. So it's a recipe for disaster, unfortunately. Like, I mean, I I'm not even worried about the Heat's future. Maybe in 2 years, who knows what happens, and maybe he's a mess. But like, I don't know if Alpha's mentioned this or even Alex Toledo, but like seeing Jimmy in the locker room, he walks like an 80-year-old man. Like, he is so gingerly walking on those feet and those ankles and those knees that are just so ratchet after years and years of Tom Thibodeau like exertion. I sincerely worry about his lower legs being able to hold up. And I mean, what we saw in the bubble, remember that the clip everybody was showing when he kind of limped off after playing 48 minutes? That's a pretty common occurrence, unfortunately. So I don't know that he can keep pushing, you know, past this point and find a way to step up is, I guess, to an extent admirable. I mean, I know a lot of Heat fans certainly would think so, but I do have legitimate concerns. But otherwise, as far as his on-court play, not necessarily tied to injuries, do you have any concerns? Because Spo has mentioned, oh, he's a great player, he'll figure it out, etc. And I guess that's the commonly held belief, but do you have any issues with the way he's played on the court? I mean, there's not enough of a large sample size here, given that he missed 2.5 games.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's not a huge sample size, and you know, he had a good game last night. He's right. Jimmy Butler. He's got one of the weirdest games I've ever seen for a star, where like, he does look like a legitimately bad basketball player, like on offense for a lot of the game. And then he'll like,
breaking news here. Even as we're recording this, Michael Beasley signing with the G League. He's signing a contract to play in the G League, to play in the bubble, the G League bubble that's going to be taking place this year. So exciting news. Beasley, one step closer to his dream of becoming the best player in the NBA.
He's coming back. I mean, Miami needs something at power forward. Okay. You know, maybe he's that Jay Crowder edition that they got last year that pushed them to the finals.
Yeah.
He's that this year.
I see it. I'd rather put him at point guard, for sure.
The thing about Jimmy is, I'm not worried about his play necessarily, but it's one of those things where, like, Gorham's looked really good, and it seems like they need those guys to win on a nightly basis. And I think that poses a pretty big problem, like, for Miami, that they can't really win without Jimmy because, you know, I know we're getting off injuries, but, like, I'm not worried about his play in general because I think he's Jimmy, but I do worry about the Heat's really heavy reliance on him and like how he's going to get any rest going into the playoffs because the team doesn't look very good without him. Right. And maybe that's, you know, that's kind of on everybody that we've mentioned already. And I'm not down on Bam. Like I'm not pessimistic about him, but you know, I think there has been some people are either rightfully or I would mostly say not rightfully uneasy about his aggression. I think people wanted him to look more like a star this year.
Yes.
And he just hasn't been that, which I think is like mostly kind of BS expectations. He just was not going to be like this aggressive scorer. But on some level, there's just a lot more pressure on everybody this year. And I think one of the things that a lot of people highlighted about last year's Heat team, is that there was no pressure on anybody. And now there's pressure on every single player. Like Tyler Hero has a ton of pressure to deal with. Bam Adebayo has a ton of expectation to deal with. And then like the whole team has this like kind of chip on their shoulder about like being doubted after making the finals. There's pressure on this Heat team in a way that there wasn't last year. And I just have to wonder like if that has some kind of, you know, looming cumulative effect on their play in general.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really given that much thought. So I'm glad you mentioned that because I wonder if that is in fact weighing on them you know, to an extent, because they seem to have by and large put the whole fluke conversation in the rearview mirror, and it doesn't feel like that same kind of season like where a team advances to the Eastern Conference Finals or even to the finals, and then they have that quote unquote target on their back where everybody's looking to get them. You know, maybe around league circles, other teams have just said, you know, last year was such an aberration because of COVID, because of the bubble and everything else, that maybe they get a kind of pass. I don't know. I mean, again, it's only seven games, but I don't think Sacramento is rolling into town and saying we got to knock off the NBA finalist, you know, contending team here. It just doesn't seem like it's that same kind of impact. But, you know, I think everybody kind of saw what this Heat team was capable of. I just don't know that you're getting geared up for them. It's not like going in a few years ago and knocking off the big three or trying to steal a win against the big three or even against the Golden State Warriors of a couple of years ago. It just doesn't feel the same way to me. So I don't know if there's that same target there that may have existed in years past, but it's an interesting idea. I wonder too, if, you know, from the Heat perspective, whether or not they feel, I mean, they always want to contend, right? I mean, so I don't know that it's necessarily any different this year than it was last season. At least they had that expectation for themselves internally that they could contend for a title, that it actually wound up manifesting because of the bubble, because they were able to take advantage of all these incredible factors. That seems like a, I don't know, not necessarily a fluke, but it was fortuitous, if anything else. We haven't really talked about Bam. You know, you mentioned him briefly there. Do you think that the whole aggression thing is something worth monitoring, or do you think I don't feel like he's worried about his contract looming over him and whether or not people are judging him for it, that he has to live up to it. Because I mean, I'm the one that asked him that question that seems like it set everybody off regarding his level of aggression and everything else. So that was, if I had known, I probably wouldn't have asked it. But you know, his game is so built upon trying to get everybody going and igniting offense that he has to walk that very fine line between when to score, when to be aggressive, looking for a shot. And his jumper has been so solid to start the year that I kind of feel like he's Miami's best player at this point. And I think that's pretty clear. And I don't necessarily have any concerns about the aggression, but you do think that's something that he could take another step in improving?
Yeah, I mean, he's been, I mean, last night he had like 15, 8, and 10, an unreal line for a center. But you know, he's still really good at defense. He's really good across the board. I think he's definitely their best player. I think there's just a lot of expectation on him from the fan base to be their best player. Like, that's the expectation, is that he was going to be their best player this year.
Because of the contract? Like, I honestly, like, sometimes I'm so detached from it.
Because he was so good last year. And I was always saying last year that I thought he was arguably their best player last season.
He was.
And that it was kind of close, and that, you know, he's getting older and Jimmy's getting older. And it seemed like Jimmy might be able to take a little step back and Bam's going to take a step forward. And so I think it was just people were thinking he was going to come into his own. And I think he has. Like, the jump shot's incredible, and it's so early in the season and everything around him is a mess, which is, I think, like, that's the big thing. If there's anything affecting him negatively, I would say it's just that the team looks discombobulated in general, and that makes him look a little worse sometimes. I think there's something to, like, kind of wanting him to maybe, you know, he took like 10 shots last night. I'm not going to watch his field goal attempts night to night, but I feel like it'd be cool to see him. I guess I did, but like, I would not mind seeing him kind of push those attempts up, because it does seem, if the jump shot is there, he can kind of get to the line at will. I think, like, he's shooting so well around the rim. His efficiency is incredible. I think, like, from all the spots in the floor where he, like, tries to score. So I think it would be cool to see him, like, look to score a little more. But again, it's one of those things, like, Spo knows more than I do, Bam knows more than I do, like, let it come to you. And then I think, like, as the season develops, as, like, everybody figures out their place within the offense more, then he will improve as a scorer and, like, just as a general offensive force because of that. And maybe it's not a good idea to push things past what comes in rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. Yeah, really well said. I don't know. Like, I've seen those games from him, obviously, where he's been aggressive and looking to score and everything else. But I think it's just, to me, his greatest strength is being able to be the spark plug and initiator on offense. That I don't necessarily have those kind of expectations of him being a 30 points per game scorer or anything like that. And if it happens on occasion, that's fine. Like, what is the stat line do you think would appease most of Heat fandom to see from Bam?
I think he could get to 25 points per game, like pretty, but again, I think he could easily, but again, I don't know if that's the best Heat team, you know?
Right. Right. Like, this is a conversation that we were kind of, I think as a whole, we were defending Bam last year when he was an all-star, when everybody from the West Coast that never saw Bam play was saying, this guy only puts up whatever, 17 points per game. How is he an all-star, et cetera. And like, have you seen Bam? He does all these things well, and he's still doing all those things well. And now somehow we've turned on him and we're like, no, we want you to score more and stop doing all those things well. Like, it just kind of seems counterintuitive to, like, we gave the contract to the version of Bam that he was, and that he can be an even better version as he has been by stretching the floor to some degree. Like, what's the expectation here? Like, aren't we being somewhat unrealistic and hoping that Bam all of a sudden becomes a go-to scorer?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that his best role is as a facilitator. I think it's one of those things where people will realize that more once the offense starts running better.
Right.
Because right now, I don't think you see all of the benefits of him as a facilitator, because the offense doesn't look like super in tune. When the turnovers kind of get cut down, and that's like partially, you know, his turnover. I don't have the number in front of me, but like he hasn't been incredible on turnovers. And like once that kind of gets fixed and like the offense gets smoothed out a little bit, people will start to appreciate again, oh, this guy's like a floor general who also plays defensive player of the year level defense and can score 20 a game pretty much at will, you know. I think right
he
now
he does lead the team at 3.3 turnovers per game.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could, you know, be cut down a little bit. And I think like on the whole, the offense doesn't look wonderful. And once things kind of get smoothed out, like it doesn't really matter whether he's pushing to score or pushing to pass. Like he seems to have a great feel for the game. And if he wants to score 30 one night, I have all the confidence that he can. And it's also like Spo is tinkering with the lineups right now. And like Bam is trying to get his teammates involved. It's not like they're playing a 7-game playoff series where losing a game is the end of the world. So like maybe if the idea is I'm going to be a little more passive because I know I can turn it on whenever I want, because I have that like star level ability. Maybe it doesn't matter if this game's a little closer here, because it's not like a win or go home situation. It's more important for everybody around me to figure out the offense. So, you know, maybe he's a little more passive in that regard, because there is more of an onus on long-term figuring out chemistry and the offense. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. What do you think about Precious?
I like him a lot. I really like Precious. The fact that they had him on Tatum late in the game, and he looked, you know, he looked capable. That says a lot about their trust in. I didn't think he would play this much this year. I thought because of the kind of shortened off season,
yeah,
that I really had such low expectations for him as a rookie. But he looks really good.
Well, he's no Payne Pritchard, but I mean, he's pretty decent, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's much lower on, like, I was looking at on-off stats for rookies before I came on, and Peyton Pritchard's like, you know, much higher than him. But, you know, I think like he has one of those like weird abilities that, you know, I think my joke and on the Heat Beat pod was that like they're gonna put together a team of like 5 Bam Adebayos, and that like he's the next step. And yeah,
I've seen the meme, Jack.
Yeah. no, but I mean, I think he's really cool, and I'm really excited to like watch him develop. And I would like to keep him on this team. Like, I know everybody's looking at trade machine stuff, but every time I see him on the floor, I'm like, do we want to give up this guy? Like, what does a Bam Precious front court look like in 3 years? Like, I want to see what that looks like.
Can that fit? Like, I haven't even really thought about that. I mean, I know that seems like the natural progression, but I mean, they seem somewhat undersized. Yeah.
I mean, the size thing is a concern, but I think what they give you with like quickness and like athleticism, kind of like you could play really fast hypothetically. And like, I think the other benefits would kind of balance out. And like,
he brings the ball up a lot better than I expected him to be. Like, we did not see anything like that from his year in Memphis. So he's been Bam like in his initiating offense. So that's been pretty impressive.
I think he's almost looked, in some respects, like better than Bam had as a rookie did in some like aspects of like, I think he might be, I think as a rookie, he looks a little better than Bam did bringing the ball up the floor. Maybe I'm misremembering. But Bam had like strength that Precious doesn't have as a rookie. Like Bam did, I think, other things much better than Precious did as a rookie. So there are differences, but they do have this like, you know, they're contributing on defense from day one. And the fact that he can put the ball on the floor at all as like a 6'10", well, like 20-year-old is ridiculous.
So, I guess we could talk about Goran. I mean, I know it doesn't take much to prod you into talking about it, but yes, I think we both acknowledge that he's been fantastic. Struggled a little against Boston, but overall, I'd say it's been a pretty great season for a guy who I wasn't sure would return to play. And so he's not only looked really solid. I do have, like Jimmy, concerns about Goran's health. If Spo continues to go to that well too often, whether or not he's going to be able to sustain this over the course of the regular season, there's not going to be a lot of time for breaks and it's going to be a very obviously compressed schedule. I would like to see more active games where he sits out, but I just feel like Spo and Goran both just aren't on that page. They're just not even going to look at load management as an option, which is unfortunate because I feel like him and Jimmy both need it. But overall, it's been a great year for Goran, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, we did the offseason report card thing.
Yeah. Exit interview, Jack. Exit interview.
The exit interview. I'm sorry. I forgot. We didn't grade him, but it was an exit interview. No, I mean, we remarked on, you know, obviously concerns about injuries, but also, you know, his incredible consistency as a player up until last year. And again, he's remarkably consistent to a point where it is really weird. Like, I don't think anybody expected him to look as good as he has.
No.
But 100%, they need to figure out some kind of load management system because, I mean, I think their best lineup is still with him in. He's still their best point guard. That's not going to change this season. And they need to figure out a way to have him fresh legged for the playoffs.
All right, let's wrap it up then. So should we have legitimate concerns about this team? Because yes, I think we've talked about plenty that they're clearly struggling. They're not the best version of themselves yet. I feel like there's this kind of there's some lethargic attitude about this team in general because they didn't start off well. Maybe those expectations were somewhat unrealistic, but I feel like you and I are probably both on the same page as far as preaching patience. It's going to take some time to kind of click, and maybe a move needs to be done in order for it to fit. But again, looking at the fact that they're 7 games into the season and they were missing arguably their best player in Jimmy for 2.5 of those, I don't feel like we should be panicking just yet. And I feel like people are either indifferent or starting to panic and say, trade everybody for James Harden and Bradley Beal and et cetera. But I don't feel like it's that bad yet. I do feel like there's something that has to happen, whether it's internal or external. I'm not sure. I'm not getting any sense from the team that they're looking to make a change externally, but internally, I know they'd rather concentrate on developing this team and getting them to reach the point that they think they're capable of reaching. Do you see it along those same lines?
Yeah, I think I 100% agree. I think some kind of minor change needs to happen.
And it might be Kelly, right? It might be Kelly in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that might be it. I mean, it could be something as small as that. Like, I don't agreeing with you, I don't think there's cause for panic, but there is clearly, I think we're far enough along to see that like there are shortcomings that need to be addressed in some way. And I think they will. Like, I mean, I trust the team to figure it out.
Well, why don't you tell my listeners where they can find you and all of your great, awesome work with the Miami Heat Beat crew.
Okay. You can find me at Alfonso Hoops on Twitter. And I do the Miami Heat Beat podcast. I'll be doing the pregame stream. I'll be hosting that from now on the Miami Heat Beat Twitch channel. So you can follow me and follow Miami Heat Beat to figure out how to watch me.
What does that entail exactly? The pregame, you kind of just preview what's going to happen and talk about the latest news as leading up to the game.
Yeah. I mean, like 30 minutes before tip off, we'll have a stream with me and like a couple other people from like the 50 people who work at Miami Heat Beat.
I can't compete. You guys have too deep a crew. I mean, five reasons. You have like this stable of people that just keep coming up here. It's just me fighting this tide here. I feel like that the meme of Jon Snow taking on the hordes of whatever. It's just anybody with Photoshop skills can just put that together. What's that?
You're Jimmy Butler in the finals, like walking up, like fighting for a layup and then like leaning against the desk.
I like it.
Admirable.
Thank you so much. Now that's gonna be my tagline from now on. I'm like the Jimmy Butler of podcasters here in South Florida. All right. Well, thanks so much to everybody for listening. As always, make sure to check out the show, leave a review whenever possible. Remember to get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.